This is Camilla Araginaro for the Telos Press podcast, and today I am speaking with Michael Millerman, scholar of political philosophy and author of Beginning with Heidegger, Strauss, Rorty, Derrida, Dugin, and the Philosophical Constitution of the Political. The article we discussed today was published in Telos 193 and is titled The Ethno-Sociological and Existential Dimensions of Alexander Dugin's Populism. Michael, thank you for being here today. Can we start with a question on why study the theoretical foundations of populism and why Alexander Dugin's version of it?
Yes, well, thanks for the invitation. I'm happy to be here. I noticed when doing my research in the field of political theory that populism, and you don't have to be in the discipline of political theory to see this, populism, especially around 2016 and onward, had become a topic of increasing attention, consideration, and concern on behalf of some liberal Democrats who thought it posed a threat to the reigning order of things. So populism had already been in the air as something worth taking a look at. And I just combined my expertise on Alexander Dugin's political theory with this newfound interest in populism to show something that I thought was missing from the literature that I had seen, which was a careful assessment of the philosophical dimension of populism, if there is one in a specific thinker's works. In the case of Dugin, who has a reputation, for better or worse, as being Putin's brain, as being somebody who's trying to establish an ideology against Western liberalism, but not quite on a communistic or fascistic front, Dugin was really seen as a novel theoretical thinker with important political influences, but nobody had really looked, I think, at his works in a sustained way to see, well, what role do the people play in his theory? Because as a matter of fact, the people play a huge role in his theory. Now, that requires some understanding. Who are the people for Dugin? Why are the people important? And what does he mean by that? What's the specific nature and the specific contours of his populism? So that's what I wanted to write about.
Thank you for that introduction. Could you speak a little bit about Dugin's first political theory and his concept of the narod and how that relates to his theory of a people?
Yeah, so Dugin's basic idea with the fourth political theory is that the 20th century was primarily marked by ideological conflict between liberalism, communism, and fascism, which he calls the first, second, and third political theories. So he traces the history of their conflict and then the ultimate victory of liberalism at the end of that, and its transformation from one among a number of competing ideologies to the default. When it was the victor of the ideological war, it became the new context for everything that happens. It was no longer an object in the field of ideological struggle. It constituted the new field of ideological struggle. So he says, what happens if you oppose liberalism, but you don't want to oppose it from either the second or third political theories? If you think that all three of liberalism, communism, and fascism as political ideologies are mistaken for whatever reason, then you need to have some way that you can oppose them in a coherent, sound way that has some genuine political prospects of becoming an effective opposition force to the status quo, to liberalism once it's been victorious. So he has this idea of the fourth political theory, which declares the open space opposite liberalism and communism and fascism as the area for potentially constructing an alternative political theory. So that's the negative side of the fourth political theory, what it rejects. It says, we're not going to be liberals, but we're also not going to have recourse to the outdated political ideologies either. And that liberates us for thinking about a new alternative, but it also forces us into the position that we have to think about how to construct a substantive, positive response to liberalism. So this is the second half of what he writes. So the first one is what it rejects, but then the second one is, well, how are we going to build it up now? And he has a couple of different things he says about how the fourth political theory could construct itself in opposition to liberalism. One of the things that he says is it can review the first three political theories, liberalism, communism, and fascism, for elements that may be useful in them. So he has this interesting idea that the ideologies are what they are as completed systems. So all of the pieces of the ideology, they sort of possess the ideological electrical charge. But if you can neutralize the ideology, remove the electrical charge, then all of the components of the ideology will fall to the ground and just be there for you to freely reconfigure. So what he says is, if you reject, for example, racism from the third political theory, from fascism and Nazism, if you remove racism, then it's no longer fascism or Nazism. It's no longer the third political theory. If you reject the heart of the ideology, then its other components can be creatively reappropriated into something new. So what he does is, from the third political theory, he rejects racism. From communism, he rejects historical materialism and linear progress. And from liberalism, he rejects the focus on the individual. And in his view, this breaks apart each ideology. What he borrows from the now demagnetized, or however you want to put it, neutralized ideologies, what he borrows from them becomes the matter of interest for the populism article, because from the third political theory, he borrows their focus on the ethnos. Now, what Dugin says is, we have to draw a distinction between race and ethnos. They're theoretically distinct. He's got a book on that called Ethnosociology, which I translated, and I used that book in my article in order to show the role of the ethnos in his thinking. But it's something that he does for the fourth political theory. Having rejected fascism and Nazism, he can still borrow the notion of the ethnos that was developed on the margins of that theory and that remained underdeveloped, in his view, in liberalism and communism. So then suddenly, if we wanted to understand, for example, what is Dugin's populism? What might a Russian populism be like? What's the relationship between the ethnos and the people? And in fact, are we saying the same thing when we say the word people in different languages or in different ideological contexts? So the people will be one thing if you're talking in an ideological context. The people will mean something else in a communistic context and something else in a Nazi or fascist context. So my task was to understand, what does people mean in the specific context of the fourth political theory? And here there are two fundamental pillars or foundations. One is the one I just mentioned, Dugin's ethnosociology, his recovery of the category of the ethnos and his development of it. And again, the textbook Ethnosociology is the key resource for that. It's not the only one. And the other pillar is that Dugin has worked on Martin Heidegger's philosophy, and especially on Heidegger's notion of Dasein. And he has suggested the interpretation of Dasein as folk, Dasein as the people. In other words, Dugin offers an existential interpretation of what it is to be a people using the theoretical and philosophical resources of Heidegger's philosophy. And this approach, for example, is represented in Dugin's second book on Heidegger called Martin Heidegger, The Possibility of Russian Philosophy, where he looks at all of the Russian words that share in their construction the root word for being. And he says, if we do this type of linguistic analysis, existential linguistic analysis, and analytic of Russian Dasein, sort of doing analogously in the Russian language what Heidegger did for the German language, what we'll discover is that the Russian Dasein is distinct from German Dasein. In other words, Dugin says, using Heidegger's methodology, we have access to the study of peoples at an existential level. So it would be one thing just to assert it, but it's actually quite interesting to see how he tries to develop it in his books on Heidegger. So what I wanted to convey in my article is that if we were to take a serious look at the specific character of one kind of contemporary right-wing anti-liberalism, if I had to put it in a nutshell, or one kind of alternative to contemporary liberal democracy, for example, Dugin's, we would have to zero in on these two theoretical pillars, ethnosociology on one hand, Heideggerian phenomenology on the other. And from what I saw, again, reading in the field of political theory, is that most people writing about populism haven't gone, at least I thought it would be nice for them to be aware of the case of Dugin, where anti-liberalism is combined with some serious philosophical sophistication.
It seems like the concept of the people plays a central role in Dugin's philosophy, but I'm also wondering about ethnos. What are the characteristics of ethnos? what is an ethnos and what is not? And what kind of community does it produce?
So in his ethno-sociological model, ethnos is the simplest form of society. It's not, strictly speaking, homogenous in every way in his account, because it's still internally differentiated. There are different clans, different groups, but it's the simplest social category in his model. And it lies at the basis of the subsequent, more developed, more complex social models, though it recedes further into the background in each of them. The way that he sees it in one image is that the ethnos is like, you can just say it becomes more submerged or goes into the background as society becomes more complex. So in his model, what follows the ethnos, the simplest form of social society, which is internally self-contained, it hasn't yet had a radical rupture where it breaks out into the external world as something radically other than itself. I mean, you have to remember, this is something that he develops his model over quite some length. But the ethnic society, when it begins to have an internal dynamism and encounters its limit, its social limit against the, you know, the radically other abyss, it begins its transformation into another social model that he calls, in Russian, the narod. That's the word that in English, typically we would translate as people. And he offers a variety of other synonyms for it in other languages. For example, Laos in Greek, probably Am would possibly be a Hebrew equivalent, folk in the German. So he uses this as a distinct category in his model from the ethnos. And the narod, or the people, Laos and folk, whichever word we use for it, is characterized by a radical division between here and there, between the higher and the lower, between the between itself and the other. So in a way that the ethnos wasn't troubled by division, by externality, by a radical rupture of any kind, once it develops into the narod, it is now characterized by that kind of tension. So his second model then that he discusses in the ethno-sociology book is the narod as a social form. Now, following that, he discusses the state, you could say, the state form, and then civil society, which is even beyond the state form, as well as global society, which is when you sort of have universalized civil society. And he even discusses post-society. So in his model, these things all have a relationship. He traces the transformation of one to the other. And I wanted to zero in on specifically the narod, or the people, in my article, because that's what's important for him in his theory. When he says that to construct an alternative to modern liberalism, we need to find something other than the individual, the class, the race, or the state to be the bearer of the theory, so to speak, or to be the main unit of analysis. He says, using Heidegger's language, that it should be Dasein. But when he says it in another way, he says it should be the people, the folk, the Laos, the narod. So his theory is very narod-centric. It becomes a question then, I think, a fair question. Why would that be the case? Why should the narod, or the people, carry the weight of the theory and not, for example, the ethnos or the state or civil society, global society, or post-society? So that, again, is something that we would need to work out. In my view, one of the reasons for that is, for Dugin, this radical divisiveness within the people or the narod, its clear sense of higher and lower, is particularly conducive to philosophy, to the vertical ascent of philosophical thought. So much more so than in the case of the state, civil society, or global society, not to mention post-human, post-society, the narod social form is the one that's most amenable to the genuine philosophical flight to eternity, so to speak, or the spark of intellectual thought that leaps beyond, that flies from here to there. And because Dugin, in my understanding in shorthand, is a philosophical supremacist, that would endear that particular social form to him, you see? So there's no philosophy, properly speaking, in the ethnos. It doesn't yet have that radical division. And philosophy, in some sense, begins to decay with the transformation of the people into the state or civil society. So somehow his concern is not only with the political action of opposing contemporary liberalism or as some non-philosophical cynical types would say, you know, reestablishing Russian Empire, Russian glory, former Soviet Union, something like that. It is in part, in large part, in my view, in a way that is worth trying to grasp, a defense of philosophy. What do we need to defend the philosophical life as man's dignity at a time when the superiority of philosophical thought is seemingly laughable, you know, not even disputable, but just not even on the table as an alternative? So this relationship between the narod and the possibility of philosophy is related, not just me giving this commentary. To repeat, the second Heidegger book he wrote is called Martin Heidegger, The Possibility of Russian Philosophy. So if philosophy is closely related to the narod, then if you want to recover philosophy, you also have to recover the roots of the people. Well, what does that mean? How do you do that? It's not just something you can wishfully assert. You actually have to do the operation. And for Dugin, Heidegger is the access point there. So that's a little bit about, you know, more specifically about ethnic society. He treats in his book the role of the shaman in resolving internal tensions to the ethnos. He talks about various marriage rites. He reviews in his book, as he does in some of his books, many existing schools of cultural anthropology and of sociology, borrowing from each of them notions that he thinks are helpful in the development of the fourth political theory. He does something similar in his geopolitics books. First, he reviews all of the various geopolitical schools, and then he says, here's how we can build on them. Same thing in his theory of international relations. So that's really the importance of the ethnos in the narod for me is, in my reading of Dugin, again, it becomes a building block for the construction of the fourth political theory. It helps him to restore philosophy as man's highest activity, and it gives him access to something that is plural, because even though there's one global society, I mean, one model of global society, let's say, there's a plurality of peoples. And therefore, it's worth thinking about what a political order would be that reflected and protected the plurality of peoples, as opposed to uniformity of global society or the nightmare, as he sees it, of post-human, post-society.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on the idea of plurality and the fact that Dugin protects it, because that was one of my questions as I was reading the article. The other thing I was wondering about has to do with populism in relation to nationalism. In your article, you mentioned that populism is not nationalism. Could you explain the distinction between populism and nationalism?
Yes, in Dugin's model, the people and the nation are distinct. And there may be other models where these words are synonymous, but in his presentation, they're separate. Nationalism for him is a modern phenomenon. He actually has a section on nationalism in the ethno-sociology book, and different forms of nationalism, different theorists of nationalism. And the main thing for him is that it's primarily a constructed identity in a way that the people is not a constructed identity. So that's one distinction between it. The society of the people is a less complex, less developed society than national society, and then national state societies. The key thing to understand is that nation for him is a modern category. Nationalism is a modern and constructivist approach. The people is something more fundamental, something prior, something simpler, something preceding the nation in terms of social development. And he is actually not a nationalist in the Russian contemporary discourse. There are Russian nationalists who have debated and criticized Dugin for his non-nationalism or even anti-nationalism. So for him, nazia or nation just has a different set of meanings than the people, and that different semantic construction, again, too modern, too much constructivist, not enough internal plurality, too exclusivistic. So there are other things I could say about it, but the main thing is that they're distinct for him in his theory, and he really puts his emphasis on the people, not on the nation. There are other models, I think, and he addresses some of them, where you have a term like ethno-nationalism. So a term like ethno-nationalism in Dugin's model is a little bit confused because it's combining separate categories from the ethno-sociological model without being super clear about what is an ethnos, how does it transform into a people, how does people transform into a nation, state, civil society, global society, and post-society. So the important thing is just not to collapse them. Again, another way of looking at it is you can be a national. Nationalism is somehow a legal category as well. You can be a national if you have citizenship of a certain kind. You are a member of a nation in a legal sense like that. So that's not to say that the alternative to nationalism is ethno-nationalism, because again, ethnos is distinct, both from the nation and from the people. One of the things that I find really helpful about his model, and I think I mentioned this in the paper, is it gives us clear-cut concepts with which to think about these categories. If we begin to talk about ethno-nationalism, civic nationalism, then we're combining ethnos, civil society, and it helps to just pull those all apart and to be distinct in the terms we use for them. So I can't do better than to recommend his book, Ethnosociology, which is where this is all developed in its detail. It's what I rely on for that part of my paper, and it's the best place to look to get exactly what he thinks about these categories.
Thank you so much. Yes, this was very interesting. Michael, thank you. This was Michael Millerman's article titled "The Ethno-Sociological and Existential Dimensions of Alexander Dugin's Populism," published in Telos 193.